On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Welcome to On the Bookshelf. We are delighted this time to have a local person who had the opportunity to go across our country and across our world talking to people about the love of Jesus Christ. That's Clifford Matthews. He became a follower of Christ as a young man. He felt the call of God on his life that led him into some amazing adventures. And he has a new book that talks all about these adventures and the opportunity to serve God side by side with his wife of all these years. The book is Worth Dying For, When It's Worth the Risk. It's from Clifford Matthews. A welcome here, and I'd like to ask you to tell us a little bit about those early days in Pike County and how you came to know Christ.
Thank you, Doc, and it's a joy to be able to speak to your radio audience and to be back in a place, this place where I grew up, Pike County. And I grew up out in north side of Troy and was born in 1934. And you can guess, growing up in the 40s and 50s, it was a lot different than it is now. Now, I will say this, that the friendliness and the openness of people in Pike County to the gospel even is still very much there. And it's a joy to be back in the area. And we've been back in the area now for over 20 years. We live down right in the lower part of Pike County. And we're just delighted to be able to serve here. But I'll say this, that as a young man, as a child, for example, attending school was really interesting because we started the day every day with prayer and scripture reading. And you know, when World War II broke out, one of the most interesting things I've included in the book is that our teacher said, when Pearl Harbor was attacked, she said, now students, this is serious, and we are all going to have to be involved. And so we prayed for our soldiers and airmen, but at the same time, it wasn't long before we were all putting stickers in books to give to a war bond. That's just a few of the things that happened while I was growing up. But also where we lived out on Copeland Street, it was not a very wealthy area. As a matter of fact, that's an understatement. The people there were all laborers, including my dad, who worked at the veneer mill, which is gone. The kids, we earned our own way. And I did get a job when I was 10 years old delivering papers for the Troy Messenger. 27 papers, and it was out South Trenard Street here. That was an education within itself. But then later I got a job with Herman Youngblood, taking 125 papers on my bike in the morning, so I had two paper routes in addition to going to school. And so Mother said, well, son, you can buy your own clothes from now on. So I didn't think anything about it. I just thought that was normal. But anyway, those were some of the things that were just normal part of life, in addition to the fact that Mother had gotten my dad to get a house across the street that had 4 acres of land and 1 acre for a garden and room for a cow. And she grew up in the farm, and she said, we have got to have a cow, milk cow, and she said, we got to have our own garden. And it was interesting because we had someone come in with a mule at the first of the spring, and he broke up the land. And from then on, we, four daughters, sisters and I, we all worked the land. We worked, helped Mother plant the garden. We gather it pull out the briars, everything else. And so I did not like that part of growing up in Troy. But overall, it was a delight. But the main thing was that my mother was a Christian. Even my dad was not a Christian at that time. And so she sent us to First Baptist Church, to Sunday school. We walked, it was 1 mile, Sunday school and church. And so we said, well, Mother, why do we have to stay for church? We don't understand it anyway. And she said, I don't want you to grow up as heathens. But Sunday school was quite interesting. Some of the people there were people that others back in those days were leaders in the community.
When you became a believer in Christ, you were a teenager. And you and a group of your friends who became Christians about the same time took that very seriously right away and got very active in finding ways to do work for the kingdom.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I found out I was not really a Christian after I'd gone to the new church at Northside, sponsored by First Baptist. And this guy stood up one day in our church and he said, I know if I die tonight, I'm going to heaven and not hell. And I was, wow, he knows that. And he said, read the John, the third chapter. Well, I didn't succeed much in reading John. Occasionally I'd read a little from it, but I didn't stick with it. And until I had another week of a call or two, and then I began to get serious about it. And then I heard a man tell about Christ suffering on the cross and how much he loved us to suffer for us who were unworthy. And I knew I was sure I'd been very bad as a teenager in many ways. And so, like breaking out street lights with my friends, just see a contest, see who could hit the lights, break the most lights, and things like that. And but anyway, also my mother administered discipline regularly because of my rebellion at home. But when I heard that Jesus loved me enough to die for me, I said, Lord, how could you do that? And as a result, I just said, all right, Lord, you love me that much, I give up to you. And from that point, I'll have to say my life was totally changed. And my friends went through similar experiences. And all of us then became zealous in helping our friends come to know the Lord. And we had some unusual ways of doing it. But I won't take time. I'll let you read that in the book. But it was true that after Swenson Kimbrough, who worked over the school as a maintenance man, had felt the call to ministry and went out and was pastor of two churches, Enon and Shiloh, well, two half-time churches. That time, all the rural churches around here were half-time right. Or quarter-time.
Right.
And so as a result of that, well, God convicted several of us to also consider the ministry as maybe God was calling us. And so at 17, I will let you read in the book what woke me up to know that God wanted me to preach. And then out at Mount Moriah, bless their hearts, they wouldn't call me when I was still in high school. I had surrendered at 17, but I was still in high school. And they let me fill in at Mount Moriah until I turned 18 and finished high school and started college. And so I became their pastor, and then I served other rural churches, four different ones in the 3 years. I went to Troy University as well as to Howard. Mm-hmm. So all six of my friends that felt the call to ministry at the same time, or approximately, you know, within a year or so,
yeah,
all of them became preachers of the gospel, most of them pastors. And then now, out of our seven, there's only two of us left. One is a man who's retired in Montgomery, Ward of Floyd, and just me.
And we're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Clifford Matthews, who's the author of Worth Dying For, When It's Worth the Risk. And it's available at bookstores and online. You can also find out more about it if you want. Do we want to give your email address?
Sure,
is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, you can contact him at iCliffordMatthews, that's with two T's, at att.net. And you can check on Amazon as well. So you became a child evangelist, or a teen evangelist, I guess I should say. We don't want to sound like Mojo Gertner or something. And then a pastor. And then you felt that God was calling you into an even bigger work. And was this the time that it was at this point that you felt called and accepted that call to go to Panama?
Not to Panama specifically, but I was in a seminary class, and my professor made a trip into the neediest place in America for the gospel, and came back to our class, and he said, there are places in the world, in our country, that where no one hears the gospel. And one, he said, California, for example, there are cities, 25,000 people, where there's no gospel preaching church. And he said, in Ohio, I've visited places, 10,000 new developments and no church of any kind. And what hit me was, and maybe none of you remember this, but they had a welcome sign outside on the city limits coming into Troy. It said, right. Welcome to Troy, 10,000 friendly people and two or three old grouches.
I remember the sign.
And so that flashed across my mind, and I thought, man, 10,000 people in our hometown, there are five Baptist churches, not counting all the others. And I said, all right, Lord, I'll go to one of those places. So that was my call, basically.
Okay.
And that way I was just going anywhere, and I did not plan to go to Panama. That was just one thing God allowed me to do also.
I know you also went up into New England. There's lots and lots of wonderful stories in both of those opportunities. You choose which one you want to talk about first, and then I want you to talk about the other as well.
All right. Well, in Panama, of course, the most interesting thing about the 3 years we spent there was some of the international events that took place then. We were then at the Canal Zone. I was pastor of a church there made up mostly of military. And whenever the Cuban blockade happened, you could look out across the Pacific Ocean from the high bridge, and as far as you could see, you could see warships lined up to go through the canal to go and enforce a blockade. That's one thing I cannot forget. And of course, I cannot forget how angry people were, how the Panamanians were so angry with the Americans living in the zone, and all of us are so rich, they thought.
Yeah.
And then when I got caught downtown one time visiting newcomers in town and the city, and I'd never learned Spanish, and I drove out into the 4th July Avenue, which divided the Panama from the Canal Zone, and rocks and bottles. Of course, the Canal Zone residents had a yellow tag, and that was very distinctive, different.
Right.
And so I might not have survived that, except that God just helped me find a way to get away from them. And I'll let you read that in the book. But then the main part of our ministry has been spent in New York State. After we had served there in Panama for 3 years, well, we felt it was time for us to go on toward what I had felt God calling me to do originally. Mm-hmm. And so we searched out opportunities, and the door that opened was in New Hartford, Utica, New York, which is just 50 miles east of Syracuse. And the thing that impressed me when I went there was that there were five families, and all of them but one were from the South. And they were working for the GE, but then GE closed all those plants. And so it was just dwindled down to very few Southerners left. When I went, I had prayed before going to this place that God would open the door for me to go where it's so hard to see somebody come to Christ. When it happened, I would know God did it. Well, I do not recommend you pray that prayer. Because everywhere else I'd been, we'd just go out and visit, talk with people, and someone would come to the Lord, and it was just easy.
Right.
But there, I talked to hundreds of people, went door to door. They were friendly and all that, but none of them ever came to the church.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
After a year, until we had Vacation Bible School, then finally we got the fire wagon to come and put on his siren, and we went through the community and invited kids to come to Bible school, and we had about 50 who came. That was more than we had room for in our little house that we lived up on in a big old farmhouse upstairs and had service downstairs. But anyway, we had a great response there, and some of the older teenagers did receive the Lord. But when I went and visited their families, their families looked at me like they didn't know what in the world I was talking about, and they were not interested. And so until the last month of the year, the first year, finally, this family, I went to see them and said, you know, your daughter made a profession of faith. Do you have a Bible? I want to share with, let you see what she has done. And he said, oh, I've got one back here somewhere. My mother left it for me when she died. And he went through a bunch of boxes of stuff and finally found an old family Bible. And so I shared the gospel with him and his wife, and they both invited Christ to their lives. And I said, well, are you willing to be baptized and become part of our church? And they said, well, yes. And I said, well, now, you know what I'm talking about. I had to explain baptism, had to explain that we had to go to our sponsoring church 20 miles away to be baptized and all that. But anyway, they did come and become members of our church. And so that was a real breakthrough. But we stayed there for 8 years, and we had a wonderful time. And by that time, we had seen a strong church develop. The people built the building themselves, and we had a very meaningful ministry there. But that's just, I will give one tie there. It's quite interesting. Okay. My son has felt the call when we were in New York State in Buffalo to preach himself. Okay. And so he came back and he said, I tried to get him to plant the church. He said, no, I'm dead. I'm called to be a pastor. So he has been down at Daphne at Jubilee Church for 20 years. Wow. And but when he had been there about 10 years, one time this man came through the line after church. He was just speaking to him, and he said, well, where are you from? People moving in from there, from all over the country too, you know. And he said, well, I'm from Utica, New York. And Paul said, well, I am too. and he said, well, where were you born? In St. Luke's Hospital. He said, I was too. And so they formed a real bond there. And through the men in his church, this man came to Christ. And he's retired then, and he had been the city board of education director in Utica, New York.
Wow.
And he said he used to pass by our little church there that we had built just this side of the Catholic church. And he said, what in the world do those people think they're doing? And he said, then I came in. I was baptized by his son. he said, that is quite interesting.
Now, you had lots of adventures, and you do a wonderful job in giving a lot of facts as you're going. You're very meticulous. I'm not sure. I don't know if to give credit to your wife that she kept the records, but between the two of you, because in my family, my wife is a mathematician, so she's the one that takes care of all that, how many people showed up. There were times that you, like Philip Carey, labored and didn't have much to show for it, which is, even though we know we're about the Lord's business, there's still part of us that's human that wonders, well, am I doing this wrong? You know, Lord, am I letting you down? Because I hear from my friends, and they've got tons of people in their church, and still meeting in my living room. Those are the times that really are toughest, I think, maybe even tougher than getting pelted in Panama.
Yes, as a matter of fact, one of our more challenging opportunities was in Albany, New York, the capital city. Mm-hmm. And Albany, Schenectady, and those two cities are adjoined, and we had a Baptist church in Schenectady, but that was all in the whole capital district. And so we went there to help plant a church in Albany and somewhere else. And so I worked with the pastor of the sponsoring church. But we went to Albany, we drove around, we talked to people, and we prayed that God would provide the means of having a church in Albany. And lo and behold, soon after that, a young lady showed up at our church one Sunday, and she said, I'm Betty Burgess from Georgia, and said, I'm a social worker, and I was going as a two-year missionary overseas for the mission board, but said I saw that Southern Baptist had no church at Albany, and so I applied to get a job in Albany, and she said, I got one, and so I want to help start a church in Albany. And so she and one other young lady in the church, they would just walk around the community in downtown particularly and talk to different people. And one time they were down there, they saw this building. It looked like it might be a church. It was growing up in front and everything. And they pulled back the weeds and bushes. And here was a sign that said, Albany Baptist Church. And they said, wow. And so they called me. And they said, hey, we found a building to be there. We can rent it. And so I called the... It was American Baptist property, and I called them, and they said, oh, yeah, we let you rent it, but it's going to have to have some repairs. But our men came and repaired it, and so we were able to get a building and start services, mainly with lay preachers from our church. And later they'd call a pastor, but and I filled in some myself. And that was amazing, though. But within sight of the Capitol, we were able to start a new Baptist church. And so that was one of those challenging times, but when it had been so, looked so hopeless. But also, I would have to say that Buffalo was one of the more difficult places we went to serve. And it's hard to pick out the exact thing to tell about in Buffalo, because it seemed like everything we tried to do, it looked like it was going to be blocked one way or another.
Yeah.
And Terry Robertson, so what we majored on was trying to get new workers to come and help us.
Mm-hmm.
I was working in Buffalo as a director of missions, and I had 7 counties, including the city of Buffalo, and we had only just about 5 or 6 churches, and none of them over 100 except one. Mm-hmm. And so we were trying to get people to come up to help those churches as well as to start new churches.
Right.
And so over the period of 6 years we were there, we got 32 different workers who came up, some for 2 years, some for just a short term, and then others for a lifetime. And so one of them was Terry Robertson, who is now the director of Baptist Convention of New York as the executive director. And I think this is the example with him is, one, we were desperately needed a pastor out of a place out from Buffalo that needed it was Grand Island, and there was no other church there. And we were trying to get a church, strong church built there, and developed there. And so Terry came up and went out there and spent a week, and he and his wife just graduating from seminary. And he said, they went back home and said, we'll pray about it. And so one night, he called me, and he said, well, we've been praying about it, but we cannot come. So we just feel like we just need to stay here in the South for a few years. And we were all so sad, my 2 children, and then we went, tried to go to sleep. And then about the middle of the night, about 11:30 or 12, the phone rang again, and it was Terry. And he said, well, I got to call you back. He said, ever since I told you we were not coming, I have been miserable. And we are coming. And so Peggy was just laughing. And I said, what are you laughing about? And she said, I'll tell you in the morning. Well, the next day around breakfast, she said, well, you know, when Terry told us he was not coming, I said, well, Lord, we're convinced he needs to be here. And just I ask you to just make him miserable until he agrees to come. And so that was one of those adventures where God answered in a way that we did not expect. And Terry is still, by the way, been for 20-something years the executive director for Florida Baptist Convention, which is a much stronger convention than it was back then.
You've had so many adventures, and I know that our time is getting short. Let me ask you this. Looking back over the arc of your life and ministry, you and your wife and your kids, because to be a missionary kid is a calling too. What would you say to people who now are starting on this kind of, who've felt a calling from God and are getting ready to step forth? What is one piece of advice that you can give them as they're starting this new phase of their life and of their spiritual life?
Yes, I can say a couple of things. And one is that you go on faith, and wherever you are serving, you work on faith. And it's not our job to convert people. It's our job to be faithful and share the gospel. And I can remember very clearly when I went out to Hawaii on a trip, mission trip, to see the, and I talked with the leaders of the mission work there, and I said, and we're seeing all these world religions around there.
Right.
And I said, well, how in the world do you start churches among all these people from all these world religions? And he said, well, it's simple. You just go and you just share Christ wherever God gives you an opportunity, and you don't try to force them to do anything, and God will work in somebody's heart. And he said, so churches get started that way. And so that's really the experience we had in Buffalo, especially where we had so many hardships. And yet, in a place where there had never been in my lifetime, in their lifetime, the people who lived there, what we would call a revival. And we had a citywide crusade and got a former president of Southern Baptist Convention to come and preach in it, and got some celebrities like Dale Evans and three or four other well-known people, mm-hmm. and they gave their testimonies. And we had over 700 people come each night in the music hall. And we had, it was around 80, I think it was, that came to Christ that week. And so that helped the churches immensely, and it gave us a bit better image in the in the community. So, but anyway, that's just a few, going a little more than you asked for.
No, that's good, that's good.
But what you're saying basically is you're not called to be successful, you're called to be faithful.
That's right.
If you're faithful, then and realize it's God that's doing the work, and you're just there to take care of details, then you'll be okay. And you have to learn to think creatively for the Lord too. Just because it's been done a certain way doesn't necessarily mean you can't try something different.
Right.
And things that that might be old hat to you might never have been done there. So for those people, this is a new way of looking at things.
Wherever we went in New York State, for example, people looked at us a little like they were scared of us at first. But, you know, as you make just are yourself and care for people, mm-hmm. and just attempt to become a friend with them, a large number of them will become friends. And we made friends with a lot of people who never came to Christ, but we also just saw some that we really thought were hopeless that made that commitment.
Sometimes we plant the seed, sometimes we water, sometimes we get to harvest. Clifford, it's been a great thrill for me to get a chance to talk to you. I felt like when we met each other Wednesday night a couple of weeks ago at First Baptist Church, Troy, that this was a God thing going on. And I'm so glad that we got to do this and that we got to talk about your book to let folks know that they can find copies of it easily. And I would imagine if they want a copy and can't find it any other way and they get a hold of you by email, and I'll give your email address again when I wrap up, that you'll make sure that a book gets to them. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Bookshelf.
Doc, it's been a privilege to talk with you and get to know you better and to be in Troy and see all the growth we've seen and all the progress made, and some of the churches also are very much thriving churches, and we praise God for that.
Our thanks again to Clifford Matthews, and you need to know that he is getting the opportunity to speak at many area churches, and he is giving away copies of his book. And if you would like to donate to help continue the printing of them, that's fine, but he wants everybody to have a book that wants a copy, and he's making them available to you at no cost. So we're delighted to have had Clifford Matthews visiting with us today on The Bookshelf. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and podcast. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.